Today's program was brought to you by the Brooklyn Kitchen, a mom-and-pop operation since 2006. They provide the tools that shape our food culture. Visit them at 100 Frost Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, or visit thebrooklynkitchen.com.
I'm Linda Palacio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from an Empty's Roberta Pizzeria. What the heck happened here, Stas?
Jack?
It was their holiday party. So I came in here this morning and I saw these guys have been cleaning everything up. Nothing but Papa John's and Domino's boxes.
Whoa.
That's right.
Papa John's and Domino's.
Yeah, I hate that kind of irony.
So you think it's like irony? You think they're just drinking PBRs?
They make great pizza.
I also sell bottles of champagne, Stas. So,
were you here, Stas?
No. God, no.
Mm-hmm.
I hate coming here.
You know, I love Roberta's, but I don't do their holiday parties. Are you guys invited? Yeah, just a danger zone.
Yeah.
Now I have slip into the danger zone in my head.
It smells like a nasty bar, though. Everywhere out there.
What do you mean? It smells like old keg beer?
Yeah. Yeah, like we walk through. It's like they drank everywhere.
Stas has her I hated college face on. Yeah, Stas, aside from biscuits and many other things, Stas is the like only person I know who didn't enjoy college.
It's true.
Yeah. No offense to, Leland Stanford Junior University.
Or offense.
It's junior, right? Or offense. Let him take it. Yeah. Joined as usual with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez.
Hi.
And Jackie Molecules over there, fresh back from New Orleans. How was New Orleans?
Oh, it was so good.
Did you have anything good to eat?
I did. I had a lot of good things to eat. Fried alligator for the first time at Cochon.
Oh, yeah. Cochon sure does it well. It doesn't just taste like fry. Cochon's a good restaurant. I like that place.
Yeah, a lot of boudin everywhere.
Yeah.
And then some like classic New Orleans places. I did the turtle soup at a place called Upper Line. You know, it says they do it like it would have been done 100 years ago. Or
yeah, did you feel that way?
It was clovey. You know, it was really clovey.
Didn't have the sherry at the end?
Yeah, and the sherry. Yeah, it did.
It's all about the sherry at the end, Jack.
Yeah.
No sherry at the end, no love.
No, it was good.
Yeah. You ever read the old documents on turtle soup and the different kinds of fat and the calipash and calipee? Someone out there will be a turtle soup expert. I think most people now just like, you know, I mean, do they kill turtles in the back, or do they buy the canned turtle meat, or what?
I'm guessing it's canned turtle meat.
Yeah?
I'm guessing. I don't know.
Well, if you look up, what's the name of that book? What's it called? It's out of my head. Herders is the place in Minnesota, and the guy, it's called, I think, the Bull.
Oh, yeah, the Bull.
It's not Bull Moose. It's like, but the Bull something cookbook. He has a bunch of them, and he's just this crazy, crazy, like a lot of weird sexism in it, a lot of weird stuff, a lot of like historical fallacies. But one of my favorite parts is where he tells you how to chop the head off of a turtle, Jack. There are two different ways. Would you like to know the two different ways to chop the head off of a turtle?
Yes, please.
Well, the first way, because remember, like a lot of times he's dealing with like a snapping turtle, right? So you stick a stick out and they bite on the stick. And as soon as they bite on the stick, whabang, right? Chop the head off. That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think the second way is?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Guess.
I can't.
Guess.
Pull it out?
Yeah, no. That's what I was going to say.
No. Stick its finger in the tail hole up near the butt area, and then the head pops out because it's like, oh, hey, hello, and then bang, you chop the head off.
Ooh,
wow.
Yeah.
Tough way to go.
Yeah, it's a real tough way to go. Someone gooses you. Your head pops out of your shell and gets chopped off.
You don't even have time to think about it, you know?
No, it's not right. It's not right. it's like the thing is like the stick thing, right? It's kind of like why fishing is so old school fishing on a line is so interesting, because you only get to kill the thing if it tries to kill something else. You know what I mean? Like only through the fish's own aggression does it become caught and eaten, right? Which is why it seems kind of fitting, you know? Mm-hmm. And same with the turtle going after the stick. Turtle's like, hey, crap on you, stick. And then you have a cleaver and you're like, no, crap on you, Mr. Turtle. You know what I mean? Like, that's how, that just seems, you know, poking your finger up its butt. I guess the turtle ends up dead either way. So sad news that happened, was it last week? It was 1 week ago 1 week?
Yes.
Yeah.
About a week ago.
About a week ago. We were, no one hurt as far as I know, which is good. But Sam Edwards, S. Wallace Edwards and son, we were trying to get them on the phone, actually, to answer someone's ham curing question. And didn't know at the time that they were, like, at that moment having a large fire. Have you heard anything about that, Jack?
Yeah. I mean, it's very sad. They're not going to be up and running for quite some time.
Really? Like, did they lose all their stock?
Basically, yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
So anyway, so...
really good people, too.
Good people. Best wishes out to Sam Edwards, S. Wallace Edwards. Fantastic... you know, ham curing, you know, family. They've been doing it for generations and generations in Surrey, Virginia. They actually were one of the first people in the U.S. that started buying a lot of kind of what I like to call better pork, like especially even like the Heritage Pork and Burks and stuff that Heritage Meats sells. And when you lose your stock like that, it puts you out like a year. You know what I mean? Like, they have stuff that's over a year old. So it's not like, you know, you can just crank up and produce all the stuff that you had. You know what
exactly.
I mean? Not only that, but was it, like, I'm not sure which parts got burnt, but aging rooms take years. You know, these big aging rooms take years to kind of get exactly where you want them. And I remember once Sam Edwards told me that, you know, you could take him blindfolded into any one at the time. I think he had three. Different big curing rooms, and he said that they all had their own kind of feeling to them in terms of the microflora and fauna that live there that give the hams their particular characteristics. And he said that blindfolded, he could tell you which one he was in every time just because they had all developed their own character. And so...
yeah, if I'm not mistaken, those rooms are no longer now.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. And if you talk to, you remember, you know, the Salmeria Bulacei guys here in New York, but now and also New Jersey? Like, I talked to them years ago, too, and, like, you know, one of the, you know, things that you build up over, you know, a long period of time is a stable curing and an aging room, because, like I say, like, each one is unique and needs to be kind of built up over time. And so it's just really sad. So even after, like, a year, it's not going to be, you know, the same. I'm sure they'll get back on their feet and, you know, because they've been doing it, like I say, for a long, long, long time. And, you know, they're really good at it. But our best wishes go out to them. And, you know, I don't know if we – is the radio – are we doing anything, or is there any sort of...
Yeah, we're going to continue to kind of talk about it. It's very fresh, so we're just giving them a little bit of time. But, you know, we work closely with them. It's one of Heritage's main accounts. I mean, like, they were buying their hogs from Heritage. So it definitely affected all of us. And we'll definitely be reporting on it more. I'm sure we'll follow up with Sam soon.
Yeah, well, anyway, so I guess I'll take a crack at the ham question.
Do you want to take a caller first?
Yeah, sure. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Harry from Chicago.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I work here in the restaurant.
Cell phone reception.
Yeah, Halsek, you're cutting in and out a bit. Halsek, see if you can move a couple of feet and then start again.
Is better?
Yep.
So I work doing pastry in Chicago, but I'm calling for a bartender who is trying to make a non-alcoholic Negroni.
Hmm.
He was saying between juniper and coriander and pine, he was pretty happy with, like, a gin component, but was wondering if you had any advice on recreating kind of like a mock sweet vermouth or Campari.
Yeah. Well, I've done, in fact, Jack, I don't know if we can search it, but we actually gave a recipe for a Campari soda out. It was a couple of years ago. But yeah, we did like a Campari variant. So you can do like a water-based, you know, just got to go to, you know, whatever. I don't know in Chicago where you get the stuff, but like, you know, here we have a couple of stores where that sell all of the various kind of barks and roots and stuff. So, you know, Calustians here is one, and Dual Specialty Shop is another, a couple others. But I'm sure you have some sort of local joint you can go. I forget everything that is in the Campari because it's been a while. I think it's like gentian, right?
Try episode 165. It's coming up that you talked about Campari there.
right.
to the listener. Go back and listen.
Bar soda. Yeah. So I think I give a recipe there. The vermouth, I've never tried to tackle a vermouth, right? So if you're going to do a vermouth, there's a couple of things, especially if you're going to do a vermouth for a Negroni, there's going to be a couple of things that you're going to need to hit. One, remember, vermouth is wine-based, okay? So in order to get it right, you're going to need some acid in it, preferably similar acid balance that you'd get in a wine. So, you know, some tartaric, depending, perhaps some lactic, and perhaps some malic, depending on that, on the ratio that you're going to get out there. You could conceivably use grape juice, because you're going to have to add sugar anyway, because the vermouth is also sweet. In addition to that, you're going to have to figure out whatever herb base you're going to want to kind of mimic the vermouth. So you're going to need those three components. You're going to need the herby component, you're going to need an acid component, and you're going to need some sugar, because it's not, you know, in a Negroni, it's not, you know, typically a dry vermouth. It's also typically a darker vermouth, and so you might want to get some kind of brown or matterized characteristics in there as well. Now, something you might want to consider when you're doing it, because you're doing an actual Negroni like it's a stirred cocktail, right? In a non-alcoholic form, unless you add some super bodying agents to it, I just don't think you're going to get the kind of viscosity out of it that's going to make it drink, even forget the fact that there's no alcohol in it, but that it's going to make it drink like it's a Negroni. It's going to have more of the like a juicy kind of body to it than a Negroni would. What I would suggest is going like a little bit lighter on all the flavors and doing it in the style of a carbonated Negroni, because the flavors of a Negroni carbonate very well. And once you carbonate something like that, especially something with bitters in it, people, first of all, are used to the San Bitter sodas, which are very similar to a Campari or a Camparian soda. And the addition of the gin components and the vermouth components, they carbonate quite well. I think you might have better luck with making something that has the feel of a carbonated Negroni than the feel of a stirred Negroni. But that's just my feeling. What do you think, Stas? Any feelings on that?
That's good.
Yeah. Jack?
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, good luck with it. Let us know what happens. Shoot us a tweet at Cooking Issues and let us know what happens. Or go on the board that they have here at Heritage Radio.
All right. Well, dude, have a good day.
Now you too.
Remember those commercials like, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't believe that we still deal with the shitty cell phone mm-hmm. reception like that.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, we can't get anything right.
Yeah. Sorry.
You know what I mean? Like, we can't get like, you know. The simplest things can't get right. I'll give you an example. Today, I'm trying to, you know, get here, and the streets of New York, we did an admirable job, like, getting the city kind of cleaned up from the snowmageddon that we had here. It was like, what, 26 inches or some nonsense like this?
Yeah.
But I saw this idiot, now, not even a private idiot, like a city-paid idiot, like paid by the three of us. Like, we're paying this idiot, right? And I don't know whether this has any meaning to you, but he's plowing the street, right? And he's got the plow adjusted wrong. First of all, he's plowing in a rear-wheel drive pickup truck that doesn't have limited slip differential, okay, without weighing his bed down at all. So he's got this like hyper-light bed that he's trying to drive a snow plow with, and his back wheels, he doesn't have a limited slip differential on it. Then he adjusts his freaking plow so that it's too high up and he lets too much snow underneath, so that he's running over like three quarters of an inch of slushed out snow, and his rear tires are just spinning and burning rubber, and he's going down the highway down the street with his tires going like, and the truck is only going like, you know, half a mile an hour or 2 miles an hour, because it's the equivalent of just like, you know, crawling along because he's burning his back wheels up. Because he's a freaking moron.
Did you help him?
I was late to come to the show. But what am I going to do? Knock on his window? Hey, jerk. Learn how cars work. You know what I mean? Like, is that what I'm supposed to do? Mm-hmm. First of all, if you own a pickup truck, I don't know, is this being like stereotyping people? But if you own a pickup truck, you're supposed to know roughly how vehicles work. No? I don't know. I just don't know. And then, just to show like how crazy New York can get sometimes, a guy was you know that you know the term busker, Stas? Mm-hmm. Busker.
Oh man!
But I'm sure, Jack, as a musician, you hate yourself some buskers.
Oh, my goodness. I hate buskers like Stas hates biscuits.
Oh, yeah. Boom. I hate buskers like Stas hates biscuits. Anyways, first of all, extremely one of these dudes with the extremely loud, like tremulous, like, you know, trying to do the crooning loud voice thing.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And you ready for it? Rick Astley, never going to give you up. God. I swear to God, I got Rick rolled in the freaking subway. And the dude, he was only off key every once in a while. So actually, I was like, you know what? If you're going to be a jerk, whatever. But like, the guy was louder than a set of freaking bagpipes. I could hear him two platforms away on a different freaking level. And like we're sitting there, everyone's standing on the platform, looking at each other, being like, freaking Rick Astley? What? You know what I mean? It's like I didn't have to just step through like a bunch of mire and slush to get here. Now I got to get Rickrolled.
Oh, man.
Anyways, it's no offense to Rick Astley. You know, the guy, I didn't want to look over to see if he was wearing that long tweed coat that Astley, isn't it tweed or does he wear camel hair? Remember, he's wearing like a long coat in that video.
I can imagine it.
Just Rickroll yourself and you can find out.
Rickroll yourself.
I don't feel like I should be the only guy that has to freaking, deal with that. Anyway.
Hey, quick shout out to Pedro, who was introduced to sous vide in the Cooking Issue show, and he did veal cheeks, 8 hours, 82 degrees, and man, it was so good, he got a small tear in his eye.
Oh.
So he's very proud.
I like that. I like a small tear in the eye.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to answer any freaking questions, am I? Like, certain things, when you get them, mostly for me, it's things that bring up like childhood memories. They can bring like a tear to my eye, like in a restaurant or something. Whereas Stas is the exact opposite. Anything that reminds her of her childhood, she's like, I hate this. What about lemongrass?
Yeah, I don't like it. I didn't eat it growing up.
You just smelled it in the garden?
Yes.
And then you had a universal hatred for it?
Yeah. Well,
did you get bit by something
chew
in the garden?
On it and,
what?
I used to chew on it. Like, I don't know. Just don't like it.
Ah, crazy. Anyways. So, like, I remember a baby lamb I had like that at a very fine restaurant. I was like, or when I went to Danielle and they did the guéridon, the table side service, but they did it so old school that I was like, oh, so old school. That's when, like, you occasionally want the hyper old school.
Yeah.
Something else I'm going to mention real quick before I actually answer this question. So, you know, I told you I bought this wet grinder, right? Mm-hmm. But Stas, you remember the wet grinder that we made, the used to make the chocolate and all the nut butters in and stuff like this. Anyway, the one that I had broke, so, and I'd never ever used it to make real, you know, food with it that it's intended to do, namely things like dosas and idlis and other. And so, you know, for those of you that don't know, like the dosa is like urad dal, which is like this, like split, black gram but it's dehulled, so it's white, and you soak it and you grind it, and that becomes like a mucilaginous paste, and you mix that in with idli rice, which is parboiled, so the starch is already somewhat pre-gelatinized, right? So it's almost like using a pre-cooked starch. Well, it is like using a pre-cooked starch, and then but it's dried, so you soak that and you grind it. You mix those two together. I did about three parts rice to one part of the dal. And you let it ferment for a long time, and it actually makes – you can make these crepes, which are – and you put fenugreek seed in it too. You can make these crepes, which are like dosas, and they're crispy, or you can make these things that look like little frisbee pies, little – what are those things called, Stas? Those little like – they look like they're puffy, but they're like discs. You know what I'm talking about? Anyways. Like an Incrustable. Remember those wretched things made by Smuckers or whatever?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of like that. But anyway, but they're steamed. And they're delicious. Those are idlis, right? So I've been practicing with this, but I've decided I freaking love this wet grinder because it's just such a pleasure to use. It's so quiet compared to like the VitaPrep. You know what I mean? It's just like whoo, grinding the stuff. Anyway, so Dax and Booker did not like plain idlis. They didn't like them, right? So I took we did the potato bar again over the weekend, as I suggested someone else they do. So I took some of the veg chili because for some reason Dax wants veg chili on his potatoes. And so I put the veg chili inside the idli and steamed it so that the inside of the idli was filled with chili. So right there you have chili idlis, chili idlis. Then, Stas, here's what we're going to do. I put this on the Twitter, but since you don't read Twitter, I can tell you this. It's the first time.
Are we doing this?
We got to rent something. We shouldn't actually, we really should. We should rent at San Gennaro's. We should rent one of the booths and make little Italy chili idlis. And if you could say it five times fast, I won't make you do it. No. Little Italy chili idlis.
Have you ever done anything like that?
What?
Like a street pop-up?
Have you?
Yes.
Well, no, that's in a truck. That's a truck.
No, we did both. So
you did a street?
I'm never doing that.
I have actually served things at street things, but not for a long period of time.
Never again.
Well, then you have to be able to say it fast. Can you say
no,
it even
I'm
once?
Not doing
can you
it.
Say it even once?
No, I can't.
Jack, can you say that tongue twister?
I had to look at it.
Little Italy chili idly.
Little Italy, chili Italy.
Ah, yeah, you're better. You're a better man than Stas is a woman.
Okay.
She's just weak. She's just sitting there like
no, I don't.
Futzing around on her phone, not even trying
I'm
to say.
Screwed for the car on Thursday.
What car on Thursday? She's talking about her travel plans for Thursday with
Aren't
radio people who don't care. Stas, you have the entire rest of the day to discuss your Thursday travel plans with me. The entire rest of the day. In fact, look, we're not even going to have lunch here because there is no lunch here today.
Clearly,
we could be
yeah.
discussing that at any
is.
Point in time.
Maybe
we're
going
to be hanging out at Booker and Dax. We have a bar meeting people. I don't know if you're interested in that. After this, we're going to go to a fantastic bar
I
meeting where we have plenty of time
in
to
our
discuss.
Personal lives. They no. always ask for more personal.
But they don't care that you can't find a car on Thursday because they're not like hanging out with you on Thursday.
They wish they were.
They might still have some Papa John's for lunch here, by the way.
No, thank you.
A true mom and pop operation since 2006, the Brooklyn Kitchen provides the tools that shape our food culture. They stock a curated variety of pots, pans, knives, small appliances, and other kitchen essentials. Their grocery department works closely with local farms and food artisans to bring you the tastiest fresh produce, dairy, and pantry items. Their teaching kitchens allow them to offer a wide breadth of cooking classes, from knife skills to pig butchering, from cooking for couples to pickling and canning, from home brewing to pie making. Something new is always happening at the Brooklyn Kitchen. Visit them at 100 Frost Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, or visit thebrooklynkitchen.com.
I have a question that I think we missed in the fold here through email. Do you mind if I jump in with it?
Sure.
Okay, cool. This is from Javier Gutierrez. I can't say it. I'm another one of the crazy guys working my way through the archives and can only thank you for sharing so much knowledge and the many hours of entertainment. My question is related to making pizza at home. I want to create a Napoli-style pizza.
Okay.
But haven't been able to make a dough that, when baked, is thin and light. I've used many recipes from Reinhardt, Heston, and others, but none have worked for me so far. Do I need to lower the yeast content or increase the hydration? Or am I failing to make the pies thin enough to achieve the desired result? As far as the sauce for the pizza, what are important things to consider? I know in previous shows you've mentioned adding anchovies, but what are other good ingredients to make a killer sauce? Would appreciate any tips, techniques, or a recipe that works for you. And for background, he makes them using a technique from Heston Blumenthal's show In Search of Perfection, where you crank the oven as high as it goes, heat a large cast iron pan on a stove, move it to the oven to use as a base to create a good and fast crust.
All right.
Get all that?
Yes. So, you know, okay, a couple of points here. I think, you know, what Jeffrey Steingarten always used to say is that the only important thing in a pizza really is the dough. Like, and everything else is just, you know, window dressing for the dough. And if you don't focus on the dough, then you're hosed, right? And most of the people I know that make really good dough, and this is the way I do it too, the trick to it is extremely long fermentation times. Right. So, you know, a very small amount of yeast, fairly high, you know, not super high, but fairly high hydration and just very, very long rise times. So you can do that a number of ways. Right. So you can start with a more normal, like the easiest way to do it. And then, you know, Matthew from Motorino, he actually called me out because what I had done for many years was you'd make a dough that was relatively high in hydration. I forget what I – not super high. Like I was doing like I think somewhere in the mid-60s up to – I think mid-60s to 70, somewhere in there. And then you know, I would under yeast it. I would let it start rising and then I would throw it in the fridge to retard it for – like 24 hours or like, you know, 18 hours. I'd pull it out like 4 hours before I wanted to make pizza. I would make all the doughs individually, so like the night before, I would break all the doughs individually into quart containers. I would spray Pam into the quart containers, throw in the dough, cap them, and then throw them all in the fridge stacked so that I could pull them all out and then dough for dough, bang, 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 just go, right? That's how I would do it. But then, you know, Matthew was like, you know, that's great, I guess, if you're going to be a jackass. He's like, why don't you, like, why, like, just use less yeast and then you won't have to do the fridge retarding step. You can just let it go. So, you know, I've tried scaling further and further back on the yeast and just letting the rise time be longer and longer. Also, I wouldn't hold back on the salt. Salt is going to will decrease the yeast activity, but it will leaven over time. And I think most of the people who are doing – I don't know how they do it here actually, but I think most of the people that you know, I've spoken to you know, who really like the job they're doing, it's just a matter of either using a retarding step in the fridge or just having a really long gradual rise time. And I think most people use a fairly like on the wetter side of a dough. I know that Steingarten, when he was doing his stuff in the oven, in his home oven testing, was using a very high hydration dough, like one that he could barely handle. I don't do that, but maybe that's, you know, something you need to do if you're dealing with a more normal oven. I don't have a normal oven. Like, I've jacked my oven so that I can get up to 850 degrees. So, you know, I can treat it like it's a real, you know, pizza oven. The pan might work. He said, Jack, he said he had the pan upside down, right?
I believe so.
Have to, otherwise what are you going to do? I mean, what's the choice? You could get one of Chris Young's approved baking steels. I mean, I know Chef Steph, they have that. I tend to still use stone because my oven can heat up a lot of stone really freaking hot. But anyway, yeah, use that. As for the sauces, I think usually minimal is better. I like thick sauces rather than thin sauces, but a lot of people hate it. What kind of sauce do you like, Sauce?
Thin.
You like thin? Mm-hmm. I like a thick, like not thickly. In other words, when I say thick, I mean the sauce itself has more of a pasty consistency, but you know, it's thinly applied. But Stas prefers a thinner sauce. But then you really need a good oven because you're adding a lot more moisture to the top and the pizza won't last as long when it comes out. And you have to apply less. The trick to that kind of a thing is just application of less crap. Like the less garbage you put on pizza, usually the better in terms of the texture of the dough. At least that's my experience. You, Stas? Mm-hmm. And the other answer, by the way, two things that are that belong on most pizzas: fried egg, just put on the top after the thing comes out. I love a fried egg on any pizza. I like thinly shaved, very thinly shaved potato. Thinly shaved the potato, toss it in oil, salt, and pepper, and then just like throw it on. And I like that a lot. You ever had that, Stas? Mm-hmm. Sullivan's used to do that. Mm-hmm. They used to make a really good – I've had really good potato pizza in outside of Rome, like really good. But I like it just like thin kind of shaved. But that what Stas and I like the most is greens on our pizza.
It would have been our day though to bring the greens, huh? And we're like
– I know, like jerks. So here are Berta's, right? Every day we're like – every day. Every Tuesday we're like, can we get some greens on our freaking pizza? And they're like, we don't have greens. And we're like, how about this kale salad that you have? Can we just – and like, and they're like, no, they don't want to do it for us. They specifically hate us. So here's what we're going to do. Next week, we're going to bring our own greens. It's BYOG. We're going to bring the greens. We'll toss them with a little like a vinaigrette or something simple. And then we'll just put them on top. I like I like uncooked greens on the top of my pizza, right? I like that. I like to smash it in, fold it in half, and have the pizza be like a freaking like salad pizza.
Huh. See, like, I like that, but more if it's like a white pie, you know?
No. I like it always.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I like strong flavored greens. I like arugula that way.
You can tell your girlfriend it's good on the Two Boots Cleopatra pizza.
Nice.
Well, so
shout out to Two Boots.
FYI, it's, you know, Jack, you want to give him the FYI on the Two Boots?
What, the cornmeal?
No, not the cornmeal, the connection.
Oh, FYI. I thought we talked about it on the show. My girlfriend is in the Two Boots family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so what the hell? You don't need suggestions in New Orleans. I forgot all about that. Like, they're a New Orleans family.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
well, they're from New York, like New Yorkers, but, you know, strong tie to New Orleans.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, in the chat room, Stas, mm-hmm. we do care. Check out Costco Travel for cheap rentals.
Thank you, everyone.
Oh, now Dave's just a bad guy.
No, because
Dave's just a real meanie.
You are like, let's change the format and be more interesting and include more people. So that's,
I don't want to change the format. I want to get so Jack.
Like most people.
I don't want to change the format. What I want is to get maybe some like other style of guests in occasionally.
Who?
To attract.
I don't know. Like, I got to get someone to agree first. I don't know. Like, who do you think would be interesting?
Maybe, I don't know.
Like, when we get guests, they're
usually... Hey, listeners, who do you want to hear on the show?
Right. They're usually a very specific kind of guest, right? So we'll get, like, you know, Myhrvold or Chris Young or Harold McGee or Jeffrey Steingarten or Dave Wonders. They're very, like, you know, they're in the nerd realm, let's say.
Man-friendly.
Whoa! Wow. Man-friendly.
I didn't hear any females in that.
That's true.
Well, cup for cup.
She came on once. She said she hated Floridians.
She did. Yes, which was awesome.
Didn't Jordana come on the show once?
No. Yes, yeah, she did.
Yeah.
She did?
She did.
I thought she came to the bar.
And Jordana Rothman, if you want personal information, Jordana Rothman, who is a good friend of ours, she wrote the most recent thing that she did that you should go buy is Alex Stupak's taco book, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And anyway, so she's been texting me pictures of Nastasia Lopez with like laser beams coming out of her eyes, like exploding Mark Ladner's head, or like
sounds awesome.
Yeah, or Nastasia Lopez carrying already, by the way, a very scary butcher's knife, but also with like blood dripping fangs. Very interesting.
Wow, she's
very sounds interesting. Awesome. Photos I'm getting from Jordana.
We got some other requests for guests here in the chat room.
What do you got?
We got Christina Tosi.
Okay, yeah,
very doable.
She like who's that?
I said very doable.
Yeah, yeah.
Donald Trump, not doable.
No.
David Chang, Alex Stupak, and Dave's wife.
Yes.
Yeah, well, we'll get her.
Eventually. On.
Okay. So another thing is that Jack and I are talking about bringing the blog back semi-live. Semi-live. In other words, like Heritage Radio, we haven't talked about it fully, but the Heritage Radio would keep it from being like overrun by Cialis merchants, right? Which is for a long time it was like Cialis merchants, I think, and then we might occasionally start putting new live content on it just because I'm sick of not having that outlet. But they won't be 4,000 word like you know posts on Nixtamalization anymore unless I find myself unless I feel compelled to do it. But right. And then we go live. Maybe we'll do the starch program on that. The starch, you know, the year of starch. I've already started. Stas is like, you love starch. You're the freaking pasta queen.
Sounds how could you? So boring.
What the hell is it boring? Everything you like is starch.
Year
hey, can
starch.
We play that? It's a starch. It's a starch. She likes a starch. Make it, make it, make it. It's my favorite. We got to watch that movie. I love that movie. Big Night. Oh, so awesome.
I got a caller on the line.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave and everyone. I'm the ham questioner.
Oh, here we go. Patrick.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good, good. I started to pester. I was just planning on hanging them this weekend, so wanted to make sure I wasn't having any mission-critical errors.
All right. Well, do you want me to read your question so people know what we're talking about?
Said,
yeah. I have a question about hanging hams for equalization. So equalization, folks, is after you do your initial salting phase, the salt is not equally permeated the ham. So you hang it for a little while and let the salt, as they say, equalize before you have the real aging process go on. I have some hams that are currently curing in a temperature-controlled 35-degree chest freezer, and I'm planning to remove them for equalization and hang them in an unfinished basement that is constantly roughly 50 to 55 degrees. Are there any pest countermeasures you recommend now? I was planning to put hams in stockinettes and hang them from the rafters. As the ceilings are low, they will probably end up only 3 feet off the ground at most, 3 to 4 feet. I'm not sure how impervious the basement is to rodents. I'm guessing it's not, although the house hasn't had any food products in it for several years. I imagine bugs are less of a concern until warmer weather, but I don't really know. In the spring, I was going to move into a warmer zone for aging and coat in a fat rice flour mixture per Paul Bertoli's recommendations in the fantastic book Cooking by Ham, which is a great book, by the way. People don't read that anymore. Do you know that, Patrick? I don't think people read that book anymore. Good book, right?
Really?
Yeah, I don't think
great.
So. Great book. Love that book. But it sounded like coating in the equalization stage isn't a good idea. Because you want the moisture loss to continue now. They will not be smoked. Okay, this is all excellent questions. So on the issue of rodents, So I forget which one of the burgers, I think it was Morris Burger from Burger Smokehouse, once told me that, you know, when he was a kid, what they would do is they would hang the hams from very thin wires, right? Because rodents can't chew through wire and they can't climb on the wire. And so they would hang the hams on these like super thin wires from the rafters instead of from strings or ropes, because the rodents could climb on those but couldn't climb on just a piece of wire. He also said that when they used to cut slices out of the center of the you know, the frying slices for it, they would rub lard on the faces as they cut it, mainly to stop the drying out, to keep the stuff preserved on that side. And he said that they used to keep the hams like that for a good long time. Now, they might have been I'm pretty sure that they occasionally would smoke those things out, so that to prevent kind of, you know, pests from going in there. Now, there's a couple of different kind of pests you need to worry about, right? So early on, if you have parts of it that are still and I think I wrote down, let me see if I actually did, because I'm pretty stupid. I probably didn't. It's not here. Shoot. If you go online – the University of Kentucky and the University of Virginia have very good cooperative extension websites on curing ham at home. The guy who did Virginia Tech's one, I think it was Virginia Tech. I think it was Virginia Tech. His name was Norman Marriott, and he has a lot of good information. And then Kentucky folks have a lot of stuff on pest controls. But earlier on, you're going to have problems with you could have problems with flies, right, like skippers and stuff like this. And so for that, the stockinette's going to help. But some people recommend actually once it's, you know, done, equalize it. You can't do it during equalization because it's equalizing and getting its, you know, initial kind of some of the moisture out. Some people will wrap it full in paper, which is still kind of like moisture permeable but not insect permeable. And so that's how they'll kind of do things. But once you get enough liquid out of it so that the flies themselves aren't a problem, like the main problems that I've had personally is with various different kinds of beetle and with mites, right? And so once you get mites in your space, right, they're like there. You can't – like you're not gonna get rid of them. You know what I mean? They used to use a And the name just went out of my head. And like I said, I thought I wrote it down in the thing, but the name went out of my head. As you age, these things go out of your head. But there's something that they used to fumigate the actual hams with that is meant to be like a food grade fumigant. And but it's being outlawed, not for a food safety reason, but because I think it's like detrimental to the ozone layer. So they can't do that anymore. So there's nothing I think that you can spray kind of directly on the you know, meat, except for they always say like rub a layer, like if you have an effective area, cut it out, rub a layer of oil over it, and some people put like hard alcohol and then oil over it to try and kill the things around there. Also, like if you get a mite infestation or before you hang up, some people before you hang the meat, some people now will take like pyrethrin, like this, like which is like I guess from chrysanthemums or something, but it's like a, you know, non-toxic pesticide, and they'll like spray soak the wood in the area with it to wipe out mites and stuff like that, and then they'll I think it does mites, and then they'll hang it and they go. But like I've had mites develop, and you can see mites because they make this powdery nonsense, you know, where they're like, it's actually I think their bodies that, you know, as they're dying they make this powdery stuff. It's not going to hurt much. The thing that really is gross are the beetles, right? And there's different kinds of beetles that eat different kinds of things, but the ones that I used to get would bore into the fat area. And, you know, right where the fat meets the kind of meat and skin area, and you'd see the bore holes, and they'd go in there. And I had a real tough time eradicating them. So I think your stockinette is good.
Do you think I should put the paper? I could do the paper in the stockinette too, or is that?
Yeah, overkill? That's I've seen people who do that. I think that's the way Finchville sells their hams, their paper in stockinette. And if you actually, if you look up. There's a whole curing technique called bag curing that Norman Marriott from Virginia kind of proposes, where you put a fixed amount instead of taking your hams and kind of like laying them down flatwise and then turning them over occasionally and then just having the salt kind of distribute over like a big case of hams. Like an alternative method is to add just the amount for that individual ham inside of the paper bag and cure it like individually like that, which is
That's sort of what we've tried so far with the cure. It's sort of a hybrid of the Bertolli percentages, but with using the bag.
Right.
So I'm going to see how that turns out. I'm just curious too I think I have eight of them with two different pig breeds. When should I start culling them? Because I'm thinking of I want to see how long they can go. They're going to dry out a little more, but maybe keep some moisture in them. Because I'm just curious at the longer end, how the flavor is going to develop. But if you have four of them, when would you recommend pulling them?
Huh?
In sequence, just to taste, as long as they're good.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can get like an ice pick, right? And you can kind of judge during the curing time based on kind of aroma on the ice pick, like kind of where you think. Where you think the flavor is going. And I would also highly recommend weighing them so you can kind of gauge how much moisture you're losing over time. But I've never, I've never made my own from scratch, but like all of the anecdotal evidence. So if you try to mimic the actual kind of heat regimen you're going to get in kind of like the classic ham production areas, I wouldn't cut into one earlier than 9 months. I mean? And I would try to wait a year if you could. I've taken 9-month-old hams and aged them an additional year, and they're hard, but they're good. I think that a lot of, for you, if you want to age them for a long time, is going to be that fat coating, especially on the face where the meat's exposed, because that's where you're going to lose a lot of moisture. And so if you imagine in your head slicing a country ham, the meat that's close there to the where it was attached to the pig's body, where there's no kind of a fat covering, right, it's a lot harder and drier there than it is in the rest. And so that's what you're going to want to – and also remember, if you're using Bertolli's salt quantities, there are lower there are lower salt content, so you could probably survive a higher degree of dehydration without having it taste consequently that much more salty, so long as you have enough in there that during the initial curing phase it doesn't spoil. But that's where the ice pick's going to help you. You're going to jab the ice pick in, and you're going to see what's going on. And of course, you don't need to worry about if you do get some taint or spoil in the ham when you bone it out, you can just cut that part out. I can't tell you, I've had so many hams that had portions of them that were not properly cured, and that part was bad, but the rest of the ham was still good. So it's never a total loss.
Yeah. So I think the plan is to, where they're going to equalize is sort of this constant temperature, but the plan is after that to hang them in a place upstate where there's about a 30 to 35 degree temperature difference between day and nighttime most of the year. So, when it's the summer, it goes up to 85 and it'll drop into 50. So I'm guessing, by everything I've read, which you've said too, is that that's going to be fairly beneficial to developing interesting characteristics.
Yep. Yeah, up and down. So like,
got to wrap up.
Oh, so like that's the reason the Travellini, I think it's the name of them, the drying machines they have in Parma are so awesome, because they imitate that kind of cycle, that day night cycle of temperature, humidity. Yeah, so like that's what you want. I mean, that's definitely what you want. But you should keep us posted either on the chat room or to my Twitter at Cooking Issues, and let us know how everything's going, because I love hearing the progress of how these things go.
Well, I think the first tasting won't be till the fall, so
right.
it might be 7 or 8 months from now.
Yeah, but like if you have a problem with insects or something, like let us know. It's it's interesting, and that kind of stuff's interesting to me, especially if you're not going to be there all the time. You know what I mean? It's you don't want.
Yeah, that's it. Sort of. It's not a hands-on operation at all. It's sort of a let the thing sit there.
Yeah.
Come back every few weeks. Operation.
Yeah. All right. Well, let us know what happens.
Cool. All right, thanks for all your help.
All right, cool. So I didn't get to any of this week's questions, but next week we're going to talk about preserving basil. We have a question from Thailand. We're going to talk about this new instant coffee that supposedly is really good, but I haven't had it. So, like, if anyone out there for next week can tell me something about Sudden Coffee and whether anyone's had it or tasted it, it like sells out instantly. But so it's hard for me to talk about. But we could talk about it next week on the show anyway. Also, I had a question on tandoors, which would take a long time for me to get to, so we'll get that next time. And also a question on drying things out with sodium sulfate, which I'm not even sure how I should respond to, but we'll talk about it next time on Cooking Issues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.